Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome in to another edition of the Under Center podcast here on NBC Sports Chicago. I'm JJ Stankovich, joined as always in our downtown Chicago studios by Cam Ellis and Paul Aspen. We haven't had a chance to talk about the big news that happened last week. It happened on Thursday, conveniently right when I sat down to dinner in Scottsdale with my wife, because that's when all the big news on the Bears beat breaks. So if you ever want something on the Bears beat,
let
to
us
break,
know when you're going to dinner.
Buy JJ a dinner and it'll happen.
Absolutely. I'll take you up on that. Take me to RPM Italian next. Anyways, we haven't had a chance to talk about the Jordan Howard trade. Six-round draft pick coming back at the least. It could escalate to a fifth-round draft pick in 2020. But guys, general reactions to this trade?
I think if you're judging from fan bases, it's very clear, according to the fan bases, that Philly won this trade going away. For a sixth-round pick, you're getting Jordan Howard. I think in reality, it's probably a little bit closer to a push. A sixth round pick for Jordan Howard does seem like a bargain, but at the same time, a year ago that Moon said they were shopping him.
Right.
And I don't think any of us are surprised. I think I would have been shocked if he made it to training camp with this team.
Yeah.
So maybe like for the Bears, maybe if you package your third round pick with that sixth, or potential fifth, maybe that's what you need to move up this year if you really love a guy. So yeah, it makes sense. In the like, we all knew that Jordan Howard's time in this offense was coming to an end. The weird part is it's the same offense, and Philly's going to find a way to use him, but it just had run its course here.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those big name trades where I didn't really have any reaction in that. I was like, oh. Okay, well, that was going to happen.
Right.
Look, I mean, Matt Nagy is not going to give Jordan Howard 25 rushes between the tackles, and that's what Jordan Howard needs to succeed. You're right. Like, I don't know how Philly does that because I don't see Philly doing that either.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, it was between him getting traded and him getting traded to Philly, it was sort of the very obvious happening, which doesn't happen as much as you would think being the obvious, but this just across the board was just sort of felt like a matter of time.
You know, so the thought occurred to me with the Eagles, because Paul, to your point, it's kind of the same offense. Jay Ajayi, when they traded for him in 2017, we're talking about a guy who's a former Pro Bowler, had a 1,000-yard season, came over, did pretty well in a couple games, then got hurt last year, only played in 4 games with the Eagles, wasn't really a factor. Not to dive too far into how the Eagles will use him, but you look at what the Bears have at running back, and I think the Bears see some untapped potential in Mike Davis.
Sure.
The fact that he has fewer carries in his entire career than Jordan Howard had last year is a point that Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace have looked at. And then you look at kind of what the Bears have, Tariq Cohen, they'll probably draft a guy. The Eagles running back depth chart is just kind of this smattering of guys who you're like, Corey Clement, Josh Adams, Wendell Smallwood, Donnell Pumphrey.
Right.
You're just kind of like, they could probably use a guy like Jordan Howard more than the Bears could use him in that sense.
Yeah. And so another point is like Jordan Howard, pretty widely regarded as good in pass protection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carson Wentz, he's coming off a couple of injury-plagued years. And I mean, that is the future of your franchise. So they could, if you're not giving up a sixth-round pick for just a pass protector, but if you were, it's probably not the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think I'll be very curious to see how Jordan Howard does in the run game there, because that may tell the tale about the thing we've been talking about all offseason. What is the bottom line for the issues in the run game? If he's able to run behind that Eagles offensive line and have success, and, the Bears, we'll see what happens there. But that's something I'm curious to watch this season, too.
I would not be surprised at all if Jordan Howard just puts up a monster year next year and people go, oh, whoa. This never really seemed like we're trading him because he's washed sort of deal. It was always, sometimes in sports, you get these trades where it's just clear that a fresh start is needed. And I think that's more in line with where this trade falls, as opposed to, he's, you know, we're going to ship him away before the whole league realizes he can't run anymore.
I think that's a really good point, Cam, because if Jordan Howard goes on to have a 1,000-yard season for the Eagles and the Bears can't run the ball, you know the takes are going to be coming hot and fast in Chicago. And that's a really good point. Jordan Howard's still a good running back.
Yeah.
But you look at what he did last year, 3.7 yards per carry, that's just not going to cut it.
No. Right.
4 yards per touch, right on the nose. Again, not going to cut it. And you look at what he did, there, just like anecdotally, there were so many times where it's just like, why couldn't he have just got that extra yard? He wasn't very good when he got hit early, and that did happen a lot, but that's happened a lot in his career.
Right.
So I think that the Bears move on. Mike Davis becomes their number one running back for now, and then you draft a guy.
Yep.
Which I think this very much squarely puts them in the range. I kind of wrote about it on Sunday, where when the Bears traded Cam Meredith a year ago, it was like, okay, now they need to go draft a wide receiver. They're not necessarily going to do it with their first or second pick, but they're going to do it at some point. And that's what the Bears wound up doing. That's how they got Anthony Miller, and that's how Anthony Miller led the Bears in receiving touchdowns last year. So this is still going to play out, but I do think, Cam, that point is one to really focus on, that if Jordan Howard has a really good year with the Eagles, it doesn't mean that the Bears lost this trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, Jordan's never – he's never going to be a burner. He's not going to break tackles, I mean, as much as – I mean, his longest run of the season we saw in the last week of the season.
He ran through a hole you could drive a semi through.
Exactly. Yeah. So would it surprise you guys, though? This is one thing that intrigued me a little bit. The Bears were in the bottom six in pass percentage in the NFL last year. I thought it would have been a lot higher.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has to do with Trubisky running, scrambling maybe as much as he did. That can probably skew it.
And I think we'll see that go way up this year. Yeah. I would be sure. Because, just again, similar offense in Philadelphia, they were top 10 in pass percentage. They're not going to mirror each other. But again, you don't necessarily need that guy. You're going to be throwing the ball a whole lot more.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said bottom six. That surprises me at all. I think it's... Yeah, I mean, there are this deal is not going to make or break the Bears 2019, and it's tempting to look at a trading for a big name starting running back, the 1,000-yard rusher, whatever you want to say. It's less of a big deal on the field than it is on paper, just because of the name value.
One more question for you guys, from me: like, would a guy? So, do you see them drafting a guy like Devin Singletary, who's kind of out of that Jordan Howard mold? Not a guy that catches the ball much out of the backfield. Like, is that, do you still expect them to find a Jordan Howard type guy? Is that what they're going to replace Jordan Howard with, or are they just going to completely get away from that kind of?
I would imagine they want to draft someone who's a little closer to Jordan Howard than Tariq Cohen, if only because they have a proven Tariq Cohen, and they don't have, as trendy as it is to throw aside any sort of between the tackles downhill runner, in the red zone, there's still plenty of value to that sort of running style, and I think it would be naive and sort of short-sighted for the Bears to think we don't need that wrinkle. And I don't think the Bears are sitting there saying we don't need that wrinkle. So I expect them to take someone a little more traditionally running backy than Tariq Cohen would.
I think you have to look at the traits, right? You know, if they've looked at Miles Sanders, a guy we've talked about on this podcast before, a guy who could be one of the first three or four running backs off the board, but could still fall into the third round for all we know. He only had 24 catches last year for Penn State. Paul, you brought up Devin Singletary. He had 6 catches for Florida Atlantic.
Right.
So we're talking about guys who, are probably good between the tackles runners, who do fit, who are closer, like Cam said, to Jordan Howard than Tariq Cohen. But then on the flip side of that, you have a guy like Daryl Henderson from Memphis, another guy who I think a lot of people like. He only had 19 catches last year, but maybe has shown a little bit more. He had 15.5 yards per reception on that, compared to in that kind of 5-6 range like Miles Sanders. So you're looking at traits, I think, more than past production, because the Bears offense is not going to be run like Florida Atlantic's,
right?
Shout out to Lane Kiffin, or Penn State's, or Memphis's offense, which Anthony Miller can speak to. It's going to be, how do these guys and their traits fit in with what the Bears want to do? It's the same thing with Mike Davis, where I think the Bears see him as having some untapped potential, not only as a between the tackles running back, but as someone who can catch the ball to the backfield and do more than just kind of catch a screen or a check down or a swing pass, who can run not your full route tree, but can do a little bit more than Jordan Howard could in that role.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Also, did you guys see what Jordan Howard was wearing for his introductory press conference. That, I mean,
I was like, can they chain him back, please? Like, yeah. It was great.
Like,
I love it.
Unbuttoned down to like the navel, yeah. Like yeah. Gold chain.
Fresh start. I'm telling you, it's the best way to go about it.
Yeah. Hey, good for Jordan Howard for having some good fashion sense there. The other bit of news that happened, God, I don't remember if it was last week or this week anymore.
It all just melds together.
Was Aaron Lynch coming back on a 1-year deal. We've talked a lot on this podcast. I've written a lot about it, about how the Bears needed some edge-rushing depth to go behind Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd. So what better than the guy who did pretty well in that role in 2018? Aaron Lynch, guy who can set the edge. He's got a little pass-rushing knack to him. He did pick off a pass against the Buccaneers in that laugher of a game.
Oh, yeah. Where everyone had amazing stats.
Where everyone had a great game.
Everyone's like, remember that Buccaneers game? That was great, that game. Like, yeah.
Just play that tape if you're free agent.
Yeah.
You know, he still had 3 sacks last year. Started 3 games in there. The biggest thing for him was if he could stay healthy. Right. And he did have a concussion. He had that elbow injury that happened against Green Bay. So he missed 3 games. But him playing in 13 games, that was the most he had played since 2015. So you probably think that there's some durability there, that maybe he can stay on the field again in 2019. But is there any upside that he has beyond just sort of being that rotational guy behind Mack and Floyd?
I think his upside was what we saw last year. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think that's peak Aaron Lynch, and so hopefully they get something close to that. So I remember it was like last summer, it was either very beginning of camp or one of these OTAs, like he had a hammy already, and I was like, is this
he didn't,
guy
he didn't practice at all last training camp.
Okay.
I think maybe it was like 1 practice and then he got hurt.
So I mean, especially when you consider that and the fact they got 13 games out of him, I mean that was a huge win. I mean, he had played 7 each of his 2 previous seasons. So yeah, you that guy gives you 3 sacks.
Sure.
I'll even say 11 games, right. Double digit games. I think that's all you need from him. I think it makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, he had taken meetings with other teams. The fact that he came back here, I mean, I think it makes sense for all sides.
I think there's a good there's something to be said about familiarity with where you're playing, where you're practicing, your teammates. I know the coordinators changed, but there's still something about going, quote-unquote, home again as opposed to going to a new team and being familiar. Yeah, I mean, I think they're exactly right in that as a probably not starting edge rusher, you just need him to be there.
Yep.
You know, like, so the health is a aspect to games, and it is an advantage if you can stay healthy. And at that level, I think more so than any specific one number I'd be looking for, it's just being able to fill in as an edge rusher.
Be on the field.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the players who played the most defensive snaps last year for the Bears. Obviously, you lose Adrian Amos, who led the team with 1,028 snaps. Bryce Callahan down there at 675, you lose him. But then, if I'm looking down this list, the next guy that you lost off of this was Sam Acho at 27.
Wow.
And granted, there could be some changes. Who knows if Nick Williams makes it out of training camp or Kylie Fitz. But, I mean, we're talking about the large bulk of the defensive snaps on this team coming back. And that's, I think, for a defense that was number 1 in the league last year and has a new coordinator, that's a good thing, because then you have the new coordinator, but you don't have a lot of personnel changes. And I think that can help this transition into the Pagano defense. However similar it may be to Vic's defense, that can kind of help soften that blow, rather than having a new coordinator and then new guys around who you don't know and you don't trust yet. I think that's kind of an important thing here.
I'm kind of going back to one of the things Chuck Pagano said in his intro press conference was, you know, I'm putting it all on me to figure out their language and to make it all, you know, all on me to get the best out of these guys. So, again, to that point, the fact that all these guys kind of, and even if you bring in Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and factor him in, he at least has some familiarity with Eddie Jackson.
Right.
So that chemistry is there for all those guys, and now it's on Chuck Pagano, and he's embracing it to make sure this thing keeps working and takes the next step forward.
Yeah, also, as someone who's probably going to be on the field more for run protection than pass protection, than pass rushing, it helps that he's, what, 6'6"? Like, it's more front 7 size when you're going to be defending the run is never a bad thing, I think.
Okay, real quick before we go to break, give me the higher total. Number of hip thrusts Aaron Lynch does after a sack, or number of sacks Aaron Lynch has?
Total hip thrusts on the season?
Total hip thrusts on the season.
Hip thrusts.
Hip thrusts, for sure. Because even if he has 3 sacks, that's what, 9 hip thrusts? Like, it's probably 2
or 3. But you're saying he's going to do it after each sack.
I would hope so.
Vic's gone. Vic was not a fan of that.
Yeah.
I don't think Nagy was.
Nagy wasn't quite a fan of it either, but I sure was a fan.
I was going to say, I don't know if, like,
we're the coaches, hoping it's him.
Right, yes. The coaches, I don't think they'll allow him to. I personally, Cam Ellis hopes that he thrusts all over the place everywhere. But
on that note,
we're going to go to break here. Stick with us on the Under Center podcast. We're going to be back with some more Bears talk after the break.
For monster coverage of the Monsters of the Midway, download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Keep the Bears at your fingertips every day of the week. Download the app today.
All right, JJ, Cam, and Paul back here on the Under Center podcast. Hey, Robbie Gould's in the Final Four of Chicago Football Madness.
Is.
Are you kidding?
Cinderella story.
This is a Cinderella story, nothing like we've seen since Loyola made the Final Four last year. Not coincidentally, Robbie Gould promoted himself for Chicago Football Madness using Sister Jean.
That was fantastic.
I mean,
time is a flat circle.
Shout out to Robbie Gould for how invested he's got into this bracket that we've come up with.
I also
poor Akeem Hicks. Akeem was out there promoting himself,
yeah,
and didn't make it past Matt Nagy in the Elite Eight. Or sorry, in the, that was the Sweet 16.
Sweet 16, because yeah, Nagy played. Yeah. Mac in the Elite.
Right. So
if he wins, you have to send an edible arrangement to Cody Parkey, right? Like, he's winning because of what Cody Parkey is.
Pulling on people's heartstrings.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, Alex Brown knew he was in trouble in that, you know, with the first matchup. He told us that. Then once I saw how convincingly Robbie beat him, I was like, ooh.
Team of destiny.
We could see a run here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to which AB made the point that Robbie, when he was in 2006, it wasn't like he was Robbie Gould,
right,
you know, the guy we know now. It was early in his career, and it wasn't like he was, like, you know, the guy who, like, got them into the playoffs. Yeah, he hit some big kicks, but that was only his second year in the league. Yeah, he was a Pro Bowler and an All-Pro, but, again, second year in the league. It was about the defense that year. I think it's awesome. I love that Robbie Gould is a 10 seed. When you put him in there as a 10 seed, Paul, I was kind of like, you're just doing this just so AB loses
to
in the first round.
Yes,
to a kicker.
Yeah.
And then it turned out he goes and he wins everything and he beats Brian Urlacher.
Well, that's the thing. So let's take a look back at his road to the Final Four. AB, Lance Briggs, Olin, like pretty much the leader of that offense.
Who by, on his own is pretty media savvy. Like if someone was going to take down him, it would have been Olin.
And then I was like, okay, you know, but once he gets to Urlacher, the gig is up. And no, he smoked Brian Urlacher.
Smoked.
He's going to. It's,
I mean,
I think he's cutting down the nets.
I would like to point out that, I mean, this is like Lori Lightfoot versus Tony Preckwinkle, Robbie Gould versus Brian Urlacher. 4,377 votes for Robbie Gould and 1,972 for Brian Urlacher.
And I mean, the guy's got billboards all over town.
Yeah.
And
Urlacher is the best, one of the, you know what? He's a top three player in Bears history. I almost said best player. I don't know if that's true, but he's one of the three best players in the history of a franchise that's been around for 100 years.
The bracket says he isn't, though. I don't know.
4,377 people. That was also the most votes that anyone got.
It's the funniest thing about it to me was that he was crushing. But Urlacher was crushing Gold on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, it was not close. I was like, all right, this is over.
Yeah.
Turns out, the web, like, Gold was just directing all the votes to the website, and it just was like a complete blowout. It was just, what a tease. It was great.
That was amazing. The other matchups, because we did have some other matchups that were pretty fun. Matt Nagy beat Khalil Mack 3,853 to 1,453. Sorry, wait. Matt Nagy beat Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Yeah, you said that.
I did say it. Okay, good. I was just making sure I said that right. So Matt Nagy advances as a 2 seed. Then the number 1 seeds on the kind of more historical side, Walter Payton easily beat Mike Ditka by about 2,000 votes. And George Halas cruised by Dick Butkus also by about 2,000 votes. So we're going to have Walter Payton versus George Halas on one side of the bracket, and then Matt Nagy versus Robbie Gould. So we have one side of the bracket where it's a nod to Bears history. You have, I'm going to say, Walter Payton, the best player in Bears history.
I'll agree with
against
that.
The guy who founded the Bears and was so instrumental in making the Bears what they are and making the NFL what it is today, going up against each other, against a coach who's been with the Bears for 1 year and a kicker who no longer is with the Bears but is still in the league and people really want him back.
I mean, it's a little bit of everything. You got a little bit of history, a little bit of current success, a little bit of maybe misremembered past success or at least nostalgia.
Again, Robbie had a great year in 2006.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying he didn't. It's just, it's It's the combination of how this past season ended.
Yes.
It's a real boomer versus millennial battle happening here. The final is going to be, there's going to be some 80-year-old in Chicago who is livid when Robbie Gould destroys Halas in the
final. I was going to say Walter Payton.
Or either one of them. He's going to be livid.
I don't know if he can beat Walter Payton, but I think he's going to beat Matt Nagy. So
yeah, I think we're seeing Robbie in the championship.
I think Robbie's going to win.
Yeah, I thought so as soon as he beat AB. I was like, oh, here we go.
Yep, here we go. All right, we're going to finish this podcast with a little bit more talk about actual football, not a football bracket, because I wanted to ask you this. I was posed this question by someone, I forget who it was on the score. It was either Mark Grody, Nick Shepkowski, or Julie DeCaro, so sorry for not remembering which radio hit this was, about who's the Bears' biggest threat in the NFC North. And I thought it was a really interesting question to think about right now, where free agency is pretty much over, we're leading into the draft, and where the Bears kind of stand. I think they're the best team in the NFC North right now on paper.
Yep.
But if you're looking at the threats in the division, Green Bay obviously had that big spending spree in free agency. They have two first-round picks coming up. The Vikings have they probably have the best top-to-bottom roster, also have a garbage offensive line. And the Lions are coached by Matt Patricia. So,
do the Vikings have the best roster? They have the best names on paper.
Okay,
probably.
That's fair.
Because, I mean, here's my thing with the Vikings is they're basically bringing back the same exact team. Also, they still have Kirk Cousins playing quarterback.
Yeah. Other problem.
But they're, and podcasts.
Yeah. And we're, but they've basically got the same starting roster outside of Sheldon Richardson, who they lost in free agency, that took the field in week 17 with their season on the line and got run over by a Bears team at home, by the way. Got run over by a Bears team that had not really nothing to play for.
Right.
And that, by the way, just on that game, that was one of the most pathetic efforts I've ever seen a team give. Even the 2017 Bears, they played hard until the end of that season.
Yeah.
That Vikings team that was awful.
I was shocked.
I just don't know how do you come back from that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even, and like, it's kind of follows that progression we've seen before. NFC title game, take a step back, and now does it all kind of blow up? I mean, is Gary Kubiak the answer? I don't know. They have all the talent in the world on offense. Mm-hmm. But if the guy that's supposed to get them the ball can't get it done and doesn't have any sort of protection up front, I think there's a lot of questions there. So maybe they have the best names on paper, but I'd still say the Packers are the biggest threat, and just because of the Lions, I'll have to see it to believe it.
Yeah, I think that maybe there's a perfectly succinct argument for A through Z on the Vikings roster being on a large scale better than A through Z on the Packers. But, I mean, you just go one team is run by Aaron Rodgers and one team is run by Kirk Cousins. And it's a very simplistic argument, maybe too simplistic, but you need a really good quarterback to be good. And Aaron Rodgers is not going to have a broken leg, and they have the new free agents. Maybe they hit, maybe they miss. But I think it's hard to look at a division and say that Aaron Rodgers is on the third best team. Like that level of quarterbacking just rises all boats, I guess, for that expression.
So here, I just want to make this point about the Vikings, where you talk about it's the same team minus Sheldon Richardson, which is an important loss. I still like this defense a lot.
Yeah, front four is
still really good. You still have Harrison Smith in the back end. I liked what I saw out of Anthony Harris last year. I know there have been some talks about them trying to trade Trey Waynes, but Mike Hughes will be healthy this year. This is a team that is probably still going to be pretty good on that side of the ball at the very least.
Yeah.
The question I just have with them is, so their biggest free agent addition was Josh Klein, who's a guy.
Right.
I don't think Josh Klein at right guard is going to really be, keeping Akeem Hicks from tormenting.
Oh, man.
Cousin
up at night.
I mean, and Riley Reiff is still the guy who Khalil Mack armbarred and threw into Kirk Cousin. So the offensive line to me, if like Pat Elflein can make some steps forward and kind of corral the interior of that offensive line, I'll feel better about it. But yeah, I don't know. I still think on defense, they're probably good. They still have some playmakers on offense, and they could be that team that, like you said, they made the NFC Championship and took a step back, or they could go back up.
Right.
They could go back up.
That was my thing, was that, last year, the Vikings, they're going to go 14-2 this year. They're not very good. Is this all of a sudden now everyone has the pendulum swinging one way, and maybe, just to play devil's advocate, maybe they are maybe they do get closer to the potential people saw just because everything didn't go terribly wrong this year. So I think maybe this is one of those things where they were overvalued last year, but now are suddenly sort of, because of such a disastrous year, they may be undervalued. Maybe there's people haven't seemed to found the right medium on like what the Vikings are yet. And that, I guess, is my only sort of devil's advocate, but I sort of agree. Like, yeah, the Bears should not feel any sort of trepidation about being confident in beating them next year. At least once, I should say twice.
So with the Packers, to get back to them, their defense is still, it's really interesting to me because you add Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, obviously Adrian Amos, and this is a defense that last year, it wasn't very good, but you could see some players in it. Kenny Clark, Kyler Fackrell, both had pretty solid years. Mike Daniels in there is some pass rushing ability. And then the guys they have in the back end, I like Jair Alexander, I like Josh Jackson. Yep. They got some young corners who could turn into something. And I think that adding a guy like Adrian Amos maybe helps kind of solidify the back end of that defense a little more than HaHa Clinton Dix did last year. Whereas you drop HaHa Clinton Dix into a good defense like the Bears, and it's probably a better fit. Amos, you drop him into a defense that needs just some kind of solidity and guidance and assignment soundness, if that's really a term. And you drop him in there, and that probably helps him out.
That's a great point, because he's just going to make everyone around him better. And that's what that defense needs. I think, you know, especially the last couple of years, it's been like, okay, is Aaron Rodgers going to get the Packers to the playoffs? And, you know, once he got hurt, it's like, no. You know, maybe that defense is growing to give them a little, you know, stability on both sides of the ball. So, yeah, I think the defense will certainly be better.
I think sort of it'd be a disaster if they weren't, right? You don't go out and spend $180 million or whatever to have an equal or worse defense.
I mean, Green Bay last year, their offense ranked 7th in DVOA. Their defense was 29th.
Oof. Yeah, so there's not really all that much to play for.
And this is the offense where Aaron Rodgers led the league in throwaways, I think was the Pro Football Focus stat.
And there were still 7.
And it was like, it was Mike McCarthy's offense, which just was kind of like, all right, this has kind of run its course.
I'm glad you brought up Mike McCarthy.
You got some speaks on Mike McCarthy
just
here.
Like, what are you doing? Like, no one wants to hear from you saying you got a bad, raw deal and the Packers didn't handle your exit or firing well. I'm sorry. You mishandled having arguably the most talented quarterback of this century. And you've got this, you won one Super Bowl and you couldn't get along with them. And I mean, don't even get me started on his late game clock management and everything else. The fact that those two butted heads and he couldn't make it work with Aaron Rodgers, and now you're saying you got a raw deal, just stop.
I mean, Aaron Jones is what, like a top 5 running back in football, and like he couldn't see daylight if he paid him. Like, and not it was wild.
And you didn't just have Rodgers. You had Randall Cobb, you had Jordy Nelson, you had Devontae Adams as your number 3, who is, by the way, now a number 1.
Jordy Nelson, who's, by the way, definitely coming back to the Packers.
Definitely coming back. And
for those who don't know what Paul is ranting about here, on Wednesday, ESPN published an article. Rob Domofsky talked to Mike McCarthy. It was his first interview since getting fired. This quote just kind of cracked me up a little bit. I kind of chuckled at it about him getting fired. He said, quote, "If we miss the playoffs, I expected change might happen, but the timing surprised me. Actually, it stunned me. It couldn't have been handled any worse. Maybe don't lose to the Cardinals."
Yeah, that's my thing. It's like, dude, you got waxed at home by like the 2-win
Cardinals.
By
a team that we knew was going to fire its first year coach at the end of the season. Look, mid-season firings are weird. There's a reason why the Bears didn't do it with John Fox.
Yeah.
But look, don't lose to the Cardinals, man.
It's not like
you. I think you lost your right to say that when you lost to the Cardinals.
And to your point about it wasn't Mike McCarthy's first year. Is what is 13th?
Yeah,
something like that.
Like 12 since the Super Bowl.
Hadn't made the playoffs in what, 2 years?
Yeah, something like that.
This was the third straight, because 16, 17, 18, so yeah, 2 straight years, like, come on, man.
He got so many more years of mismanaging a generational quarterback than, like, any other coach probably would, because he was employed by the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
He should just be thanking the Packers even now, every single day he wakes up, for what he got.
All right, real quick, before we go, let's just kind of talk about the Lions a little bit. They did make some splashes in free agency. They got Trey Flowers. They do have the 8th overall pick, so they could add some talent there. I just personally don't see Matt Patricia working out as a coach. I think the Lions have to win. Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia know that, and I don't think they will, and I think those guys are going to get fired at the end of the year.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to not rank them 4th out of 4 and even, like, 5th out of 4. Like, I just Yeah. I just don't see it. Like, I just don't.
Matt Patricia thing has gone just as poorly as you could imagine, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, in week three, it was like, oh, he's already butting heads with Stafford. And in week seven, it was, oh, no one likes him.
It was like training camp.
Right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, he's yelling at reporters for their posture. And you're just like, are things going so badly that you, like, need to funnel anger into reporters' posture?
He beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
Yes, right. They did beat the Patriots, but it's in the first 4 weeks of the season, which in Bill Belichick's mind don't really count.
Real quick question for me. Bears, over under, 9.5, since we're talking about the division.
Yeah.
You guys are running to the window and taking the 10?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not running to the window to take that bet, but I think 10 is what they're
I was surprised it was set at 9.5.
I'm at 9-7. Just an early look without seeing the schedule.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I'll take 10.
Okay, well, it's way too early for these predictions, but let's make them anyway. Anyways, we're going to get out of here on the Under Center podcast. Stay tuned. We might have a special podcast coming up this week. I'll kind of tease that and leave that there, and then if it doesn't happen, forget that I said it.
But we
might have something neat for you on Friday here. Stick with us. We'll also be back with you next week for more Bears talk on the Under Center podcast. So thank you for listening, everyone.